Good morning, world. Welcome to another episode of the IP Breakfast with attorneys Albert Dikeyi and Emmanuel Coffey. Good morning, counsel.
Counsel, good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, doing well. I'm very excited today because we have... Actually, let me start with a disclaimer here. Please remember that everything we say in this episode is the opinion of Albert Dikeyi and Emmanuel Coffey, and is not the opinion of our employers. And also, we do not provide legal advice in this in these episodes. Everything should be you should consult with your own attorney. So, counsel, we've been at this for a while now, and we talked about extensively about patents and trademark. And today we embarking into a new aspect of intellectual property, which is copyright. And as we talk about in the past session, especially about trademark, last time when we had a guest, Clyde Vanell, we talked about how prevalent intellectual property is in our lives, and the general public sometimes do not understand or do not pay attention to intellectual property that much. And I think you came up with some, you gave some statistics last week, which maybe you could repeat for us today, how much of the economy is IP, and, you can chime in those information again. But today, as we talk about music, copyright, which entails music and movies and a lot of entertainment, people realize really how IP is in their lives.
Go ahead. We welcome our audience whenever and at whatever time they're listening to this podcast episode. Have you had your coffee, by the way, counsel?
This morning I had coffee, and of course we have coffee on the call.
All right. Okay.
But I, last week I told you that I had done my 3 miles run before the program. This morning I have not, but once I'm done here, I will be going for my run for the week for today.
Wow, that's really inspiring. Again, like I said, that's a lot more than I can say. I've been trying.
You and everybody listening is invited in the run.
All right. Okay.
So go ahead. Let's go with the topic, counsel. Yeah, I mentioned some statistic you mentioned last time. Can you refresh our mind on the statistics regarding IP, regarding the economy, and how prevalent it is in our lives?
Counsel, I believe the number is between 70% and 80% of intangible property that make up the balance sheet of an organization nowadays. We also spoke about the digital age. We are now in the information age, and everything is based on really intellectual property or intangible properties.
Yeah, I think we are more than a third of the U.S. GDP, and that's almost the same in any of these developing countries that you look at today. Is that IP is a significant portion of their GDP.
So, very significant indeed.
Yeah, but no topic shows the audience or general public the importance or how intellectual property is in their lives than copyright, because somebody may not, they may be into get into some contact with a patent, but they may not know it. But when it comes to copyright, those are things that it protects things that is in everyday lives, like, you know, the music, the, you know, the TV shows, the, you know, everything that people are tend to do, and reading a book. I mean, not reading a book, but the book. So they constantly have things around them that is copyrighted. So this is the topic of the day, and I guess we'll start, counsel, with what is a copyright?
Okay, well, a copyright is really a form, like we just said, a form of IP protection, separate and distinct from trademark, patent, trade secret. It also protects original works of authorship. And we should also mention that it's part of the U.S. Constitution, that Section 8, Clause 7.
Clause 8.
I'm sorry, Clause 8, which is to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. And like you were saying, because writings in terms of books, in terms of dramatic works, date back to, well, time immemorial, really. And so we've always been immersed in this copyright. And although patent was there, but it didn't really take off until very late, so did trademark. But copyright is really the mother of all of the IP protection, and as such, your TV shows, your book, your poem, your recipe, if qualified,
software, architecture. Now
architecture, computer software. Yeah, all of that can be copyrighted.
Counsel, last, as we discussed the other intellectual properties, we talk about, you know, everything starts with an idea. So can you actually copyright an idea?
Well, no. Just like we said the last time, an idea is not copyright. Is not protected under copyright, because again, it has to be in a tangible, fixed, in a tangible medium of expression. If you write something on a piece of paper, then that's copyrighted, because the medium is paper, and the medium is a fixed medium. Then therefore, it's copyrighted.
The concept of, you know, like we said in the other IP portions, you know, in patents, I know we discussed ideas, you know, significantly. And, you know, if the audience is interested, they can go back to these episodes, episode 1, 2, and 3, I think. You know, so ideas by themselves are not property. Right, and we can't repeat that enough. You can't just say, I have an idea to write a book, and then thinking that that's enough to actually have either a copyright or a trademark or that. So the idea is, you know, they start the process. So you may have the idea of writing a book, but you actually have to write the book. It's the content of the book that is copyrightable, not the mere thought of, I need to write a book.
And let me ask you, counsel, this is a very good point, but if I have an idea to write a book and you have an idea to write a book, and this will happen to be the same thing, you write your own book about your own subject matter and I write my own book about my own subject matter, but I mean, I didn't look at your book, right? I didn't plagiarize. How is that?
And it's possible, right? I mean, you know, with fiction books, it's less likely that something, if we're both writing something on fiction, it's very unlikely that we're gonna write things that are very similar. But if I'm writing a book on how to use a computer, right? It's the same concept. Now, the idea that we can end up writing something very similar, Now, that's not going to be, you know, we both can get copyright on these, right? As long as they're not copies of each other, they're not, you know, they're not, you're not just take the book and copying it, or is a derivation of that book, right? So it's very different than what we said with patents, because if I do end up having independently come up with the same invention, now there's gonna be one owner, and they're gonna start looking at the filing dates, at least cases after AIA, they're going to look at the filing date, and whoever filed first is going to be the winner. In pre-AIA, they might have it, they're gonna have an interference to see who was the first inventor. But there is no such concept in copyrights, right? So copyright, yeah. They're gonna just look at whether your work is a derivation of that work or a strict copy of that work or a derivation. And if it's not, then both of you end up getting your copyright.
So you're saying plagiarism. In other words, if I were to plagiarize your work.
Well, plagiarism is not in IP. It's more of a moral concept, more of an intellectual modesty. You know, used in the academia, that one shall not copy. Right. So it's another concept where, you know, if you copy the work, you know, if you're given an assignment to do and you copy the work, then you are plagiarizing, and it's more like a moral thing. It's not an infringement of a copyright, right? Now, the same concept could also be an infringement, because if that was your thesis and you turned it into a book and you plagiarize and you flat out copy, now we don't use the word plagiarism anymore, we just use the word infringement.
Okay,
you're copying the work. But I think we're a little bit ahead of ourselves and going into infringement, and let's look at a few more concepts into copyright. So let's talk a little bit more, you know. So I have something. It's a music, it's a artistic work that you said that falls into these things that I can get a copyright for. Why should I register at all? Or do I need to register?
Well, good point. You don't need to register. Like we said before, once at the time the work is fixed in a tangible medium, it is copyrighted. However, if you want to later on maybe sue someone for using your work without permission, then you want to copyright to register.
And technically, you won't be able to use the court system without a registration, right?
Right. You won't be able to use the court system without a registration.
So you would have to register at that point. But you do have that copyright once the author is finished their work. Technically, their work is copyrighted. Now, what is the concept of the poor man's copyright? What is that, and should that be? Can you do that instead of registration?
Well, this is something we hear every day in whenever someone comes to us and wants to protect their IP, then they talk about the poor man's registration. It's the idea of just taking a copy of your work, put it into an envelope, and then mailing it to yourself through. Then that's really what the Pullman's copyright is all about.
Yeah, so that's kind of, you know, they want proof that they did it. So they put it in the mail system, and they get a stamp on it, and they can say, hey, this is my proof that I've done this work as of such date. But it should not be done in lieu of the registration, because it's you can use that as proof, but it is a harder proof than if you actually register. Because when you register with the Copyright Office, the Copyright Office does publish your registration and to give the public notice that that you have a copyright in this song, for example. And they also have a copy at the copyright office that you can go and listen to. And that way you know exactly what it is. And if the registration is done for 5 years, that registration can serve as a prima facie case of evidence that this is yours, right? So the idea of finishing your work and not registering it is still, you should try to, it's going to be copied. You should register. Of course,
you should.
The registration is done with the Office of Copyright. They have a system called ECO. It's Electronic Copyright Office. And in that system, you'll be able to start your application and pay your fees. There are obviously details that we're not going into there, but that's where you would actually go to create a register. That's www.copyright.gov, right, Council?
Yes, that's, and then we also might mention in passing that just like patent, copyright is at the federal level.
Yes, yes. I just lost my thought.
No, we were saying that in terms of the copyright office providing you with the registration, they would provide you with a certificate that has an identification identifying the work, and it's part of the Library of Congress.
Yeah, and everything that we say here, I mean, we do not want people to think they are easy nor difficult, right? If you're not sure what you are doing, you should use the website www.copyright.gov to gather as much information as possible to see if you can do it on your own, because everything in these IP world you can do on your own. However, it is also suggested in your due diligence to counsel with an attorney who might help you not only to get to the process quicker and also avoid pitfalls in the future. So, counsel, jumping to what does in things that are can be protected? Can I copyright my website?
Your website, the authorship, the original authorship on a website may be protected by copyright. In other words, what we're saying, like the writings, the artwork, photographs, and other forms, but the website itself is not protectable in that sense.
So what we're saying is that the domain name by itself is not something that you copyright. In fact, that's something you register with GoDaddy, and there's an organization, Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, which is called ICANN, which kind of administer over that. That's how you get your name. The content of it, the write up, any drawings that you may have may be subject to of copyrights. What else can we copyright? Can you copyright a recipe?
You can copyright a recipe, but it's always a good idea to make sure it's just not a listing of ingredients for something. You have to have some kind of inventiveness around that recipe, maybe your remarks and things of that nature, something that is from you, something that is not just a list of recipes.
So with so if you have a recipe and you want to have a copyright on, you may want to explain a little bit more on how the recipe. So with some write-up, it could be okay, but if it's just a listing of ingredient, it may not be okay to copyright.
Yes, it may. Council, again, just a note on domain name, which may also be registered under trademark, that may also be protected under trademark.
Yes, so there is, I guess, there is this, I don't want to say symbiotic, you know, relationship, but we did talk about the bundle of rights, right? So as you protect your ideas or your business, that sometimes it is beneficial based on your business analysis to have a patent, a copyright, a trademark, right? Mm-hmm. So there's always this relationship. So while the content of the book is not the subject of a patent, it's also not the subject of a trademark, so it would be copyright in that case. But the name of the book could be a trademark, right? Like there are companies like I think they have like Computers for Dummies, and you know, they have a bunch of different versions of things for dummies, right? In a sense, writing books that are simple for people who are not familiar with the subject, not necessarily dummies, but people who are less familiar with the subject, and they try to make it in bites that are digestible for the general public. And that name would be a trademark concept. So when you have your ideas, you know, you have to give it to the right professional and discuss it with the right professional that can guide you on whether you have, in the same ideas you have, do you have patent ideas? Do you have trademark ideas in there? Do you have patent ideas in there? And perhaps even, do you have trade secrets in your ideas? And that's how you best go and protect your business.
Right.
Yeah, so let's talk about, Council, I wanted to bring, in the copyright realm, for people who were in maybe late 90s, early 2000s, there was a big issue with copyright distribution over the internet. One of the cases that was talked about a lot was the Napster case. And people who are my age, who've been watching these things. So what was Napster? Napster created a portal wherein anyone who had content, music, they could upload it in their site, and anybody else who was a member of that forum could easily download that music and create their own library. And so basically sharing the music. And the industry really went hard after Napster, and the gentleman who created this platform became a billionaire very quickly. I think it was Sean Parker, who was the owner, who was the founder of that company, and in one split second, the billions or the millions became zero, because the court did find that this was an infringement, and that Napster was guilty in facilitating this infringement of music, and the company had to shut down. So you do not have Napster anymore, because he was allowing people to just copy the music. So. And I think they raise all kind of issues, you know, fair use, and all kind of defenses, but none of them stick at the time. Talking about that, Council, maybe you could give the audience a little bit about what is fair use.
Oh, okay, yes, fair use is really exceptions, we should say, to the law, to the copyright law. One example is, for example, a professor who's teaching a class can make copies of a portion or party or pages of a book and then distribute it just for that purpose, the purpose, for the purpose of illustrating or teaching teaching the class. That's fair use.
Yeah, that same professor is not allowed to go and every week copy a chapter of the book and passing it out until the whole book was passed out to the class, right?
Then the author then would not have any reason to now write books there, because you have to spend the time and effort and energies and write books. So you want people to continue to write books.
Yeah, and isn't that the impetus of intellectual property, is to protect the intellect, protect the work of the person who has done it, to such a way that they get some benefits of the work that they are doing. And the law has already looked into it and said, there are conditions where there is fair use. There is just mentioning a portion of your book is not necessarily copying your book. So that gives the exception and the latitude to use things in educational purposes and writing purposes without fear of infringement. However, what is considered fair use is a very complex matter, where the scope, how far you can copy something is subject to the court cases. And we can't give exact examples. I would say if you're using somebody else's work, tread carefully and do your due diligence so you're not sued.
Right. And one quickly, I know we're running out of time, but in terms of fair use parody, I think there was one song that also was the subject of a lawsuit, and then the defense that was raised was parody.
But yeah, parody seems to be okay. I guess it's a derivation of the work, and derivations of the work also is a concept of copyright. Now, what is considered a derivation wherein it's not enough, and what is enough is again subject of the court courts. I mean, the court cases, the case laws. To really see what you have. But if you have a pure parody, it seems like the court is okay with the parody, and it's so different that it's not even considered as a derivation of a work anymore. It becomes an original work.
Yes, that's time is really flying by when you're having fun. Counsel, we also, especially in this age, you mentioned Napster, but we should also mention the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, especially when it comes to takedown notices in terms of websites. We spoke about websites. As we know, with the advent of the internet and websites, a lot of people are using other people's work. When it's found that your website may be using copyrighted material, you'll get a notice or a takedown notice. And if you don't, your website could be shut down.
Yeah, so I mean, the internet has created very very modern way of copying. I mean, in the past, a book, let's say copiers, right? A book, in order to copy it, you would have to actually sat there and actually copy every word into a document. And not that it's impossible, I guess you could hire 100 people and each one create a book, and after a week you would have 100 books. With copiers, you could make thousands of copies of a book any particular day, right? And then sell it on there. But with the internet, distribution is even easier, right? You can just create the document and make it downloadable, and millions of people can download this thing without even making it into a copy. So that's the needed changes in the law to look at the digital world and try to adapt these the old laws to the new
reality, to the new facts.
Reality of the internet. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you spoke about people. You said people can share the book, the copied book, in a just like also file sharing over the internet. There is also these movies that people can download on their computer, and there is a lot in copyright right now, in as far as the internet and distribution is concerned.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of money that is we're talking about, and either in licensing and when you have this type of work, you can once it's a property, you can reassign it, you can license it, you can sell it to somebody else. So there's a lot of money that can be made there, or there's a lot of money that is being lost when somebody is copying. You know, you have a movie, many people may be familiar with these websites where, you know, any movie that seems to come out, the next day it's on these websites for free viewing. And of course that's a violation, because copyright, the owner of that right, I haven't made a movie, but I try to make a 2-minute video, and that 2-minute video took me hours to actually get it the way I wanted it, with editing and getting the right words and so on and so forth. So doing a movie of an hour and a half takes a tremendous amount of work, getting the story, taping the story, editing the story, putting the right stuff in there so that people are interested. And when the movie is really, really good, it's when that people are really, really want to just copy it and not pay for the services, which is a very unfair. And these websites are really causing damages, because if these works are not somehow compensated, then what is the incentive of spending time to make a movie? Granted, that's a very lucrative environment, but why would people do it if they don't get paid back for the investment? And obviously, there's significant investment that's made up front that they need to recoup. And also, they didn't just want to do it because. And any author, right? Any author can decide. If they have a work that they want to give to humanity, you're free to do that, right? You can always say, this is free to humanity. I write a book and I just publish it on the internet, and I could even say, hey, use as you please, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so, counsel, but it's too much fun.
Right. There's a lot we can say.
Yeah, we are 2 minutes over. Today, I hope that our audience enjoyed it. They can always contact me at ADECADY in Twitter.
And they can always contact me at ACoffeyLaw, COFFYLAWLLC. And we hope to see you next week. Until then, be well.
Ciao.